It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
And welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast as our long Easter weekend continues. Yes, we are talking property news on a Sunday. In fact, every morning you'll hear us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Apple Podcasts and Amazon. Tell you what, today is March the 31st, the last day for the month. Now, a couple of days ago, I mentioned if you were travelling on the roads to drive very carefully and to watch out for these people that think they are in an F1 race car. It happened, of course, a driver was caught travelling more than 60 kilometres over the speed limit, double the blood alcohol limit, and the worst part, of course, about this, four children in the car. He was doing 171 kilometres an hour. So be careful if you're on the roads and travelling back tomorrow. Now, coming up, we have got 7 days of real estate. Yes, last week it was a pretty busy week. We started with David Wood, the principal from Albert Park. He was here talking about people moving into the area and essentially not leaving. Esther Suckling from Grattan Institute was here talking about high-density living. Stuart Jones from Sydney, he talked about why people are paying up to $20,000 for just 1 square metre of land, even more in some pockets of Sydney. And Matthew Hughes, the man that knows a thing or two about the Perth property market, he was in as well. So that is all coming up on our Easter Sunday.
Let's explore together the power of real estate. We keep you better informed and updated.
Yes, it's been a busy weekend here in Melbourne, Craig. So it's we've had the Grand Prix in Albert Park. So it's been fabulous.
You know, the Grand Prix, we've talked about this before. You've got the series on Netflix. It's just sort of elevated the sport. Everybody's into it now, particularly a lot of women that follow it who never did because of the personalities that are showing off on that TV series.
I read that statistic and it's amazing, but I can tell you that the Grand Prix was sold out for all 4 days.
And who's your favourite team principal, dare I ask?
Well, I don't follow it that closely, but it's like a lot of things in Melbourne. You become an expert for 1 week. You become an expert in tennis when the Australian Open's on, and an expert in Grand Prix, and then the show rolls on and we get back to normal life of selling real estate in Albert Park.
Now, tell us a little bit about the volume of sales in your area for 2024, because you're up on last year.
Yes, it is. The volumes have increased this year, or so far for this period, but we've seen in the last month or so increased volumes, but the market has absorbed it very well because typically in Albert Park and the surrounding Inner Bayside areas, as we move up towards the Grand Prix and then Easter being quite early this year, there were a number of weekends that weren't available. So vendors did choose to come on to the market early through February and March and take advantage. So February and March have been very strong in regards to volume, but the market has accepted it well and the sales volumes have been strong.
And David, I wanted to ask you about the scarcity of land and also the finite supply of Albert Park properties. Can you explain that a little bit to our audience, particularly those that don't know too much about Albert Park?
Sure, Craig. Albert Park's a very small suburb, only about 3 or 4 kilometres from the CBD, and it's bordered by the Port Phillip Bay and the Albert Park Lake, and then we have the adjoining sister suburb of Middle Park. So there's only about just over 2,000 homes actually for sale in Albert Park, and there's a scarcity of supply. A lot of people, once they're here, they choose not to leave. And if you went back sort of 20, 25 years ago, young families, when they came to Albert Park and lived in a terrace home, a single level, 2-bedroom, typically when the children grew up, they would sell that home and move further out along the bay or out to the eastern suburbs for a larger house with larger land. But the trend has been in recent times, because of the popularity of the area, the popularity of the Albert Park College, which is the school, the secondary school, and also a wonderful community feel. A lot of people don't want to move from the area. They don't want to have the commute that's involved if they move to a suburb further away. And we all know what commuting's like with cars today. They chose to increase the size of their home by putting an extension on the period home that they have and not moving out. So there typically hasn't been a great supply of houses for sale. So there is a scarcity demand.
Gain insights with exclusive conversations from real estate professionals about buying, selling and investing across Australia.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me. So this report echoes a lot of the sentiments that at the Grattan Institute our research has touched on, which is that the limited supply of housing is the key driver of the big increase we've seen in house prices and the very tight rental market for many Australians. In order to move towards a housing market which is more affordable and has a higher vacancy rate of properties, we need to be able to shift our housing stock from the current makeup, where we have mostly single unit, larger land sizes, to more of a variety of stock, which includes more low or more medium to high density housing.
So with this, I mean, they're talking about median to higher density. I mean, that's the option. That's what they're saying people should be doing. But that's all well and good saying, hey, we'd like you to get into higher density. But it comes down to the attitude and very much the mindset, because not everybody is in this current frame of thinking, are they?
Yeah, so I think that's a good point. There has historically been sort of the dream in Australia of owning the block of land with the garden out the back and a fair bit of space. But as the housing market has tightened, we're seeing that attitudes have really shifted, and there are more Australians, particularly young Australians, who are interested in living in smaller units, whether that be an apartment or a townhouse. But what we're noticing is that people's preferences are changing. So in 2016, smaller dwellings, including townhouses and apartments, made up 44% of Sydney's housing stock and 33% of Melbourne's. But when we asked people across the two cities about their preferences, people said that they had a much higher appetite for reasonably priced smaller dwellings. So people wanted the Sydney market to have 59% smaller dwellings, and people in Melbourne wanted the market to have around half, 52% of dwellings being smaller and more affordable. Another thing I'll just touch on is that we are seeing more demand for greater variety of smaller units of land. So it's not just a big 10-story building with quite small apartments. We're also seeing demand for, say, a semi-detached townhouse, which might better accommodate a smaller family.
Okay, so that sort of all makes sense. And if we come back to that question of attitude and mindset, not everybody wanting to do it, I guess one of the knock-on effects of property being so expensive is that people have very little choice in many cases, that they have to go into units, they have to go into these higher density areas.
Yeah, so look, what we're seeing at the moment is that it's almost the opposite in the places that people really want to live. So if you look at the middle rings of Melbourne and Sydney, we have pretty low stock of medium and high density living, and that's because state and local governments are in control of the planning framework, which dictates what can be built. And Australia has a very complex, restrictive planning framework in most areas. So that means that you'll see a lot of hesitancy and resistance amongst residents to increase density. So many people have a story of, you know, in an area where they may want to buy, there is a proposed development, but it's knocked back by the council or the local government. The issue here is that the people who do get a seat at the table are the ones that already live in the area, but the people who may benefit from living there in a new medium density development, they don't have a say. And so we see this continual trend of policies or developments which might improve affordability being knocked back.
What initiatives have governments taken to increase property density? I mean, it is always a little bit political. And how do they aim to make housing more affordable, do you think?
So, great question, and it's one that we've been following very closely. So the big reform that we've recently seen is the National Planning Reform Blueprint that the Albanese government put forward. And what this does is it adds an additional 200,000 homes to the previous target of 1 million extra homes over the next 5 years. What the government has done, which is quite clever, is to incentivize the states and territories to get the ball rolling with this increase in housing stock by putting $3.5 billion in incentives on the table. So states and territories will be able to claim those incentives only if they meet the targets within their areas. This is something that the Grattan Institute has recommended for a while, incentivizing the states, because they really have their hand on the lever for increasing density. And we're hopeful that this could deliver some really significant reductions in house prices. If we look at rents, for example, we estimate that the additional 200,000 homes that this policy commits would ensure rents are 4% lower than they otherwise would have been. And that's amasses to $8 billion in savings for Australian renters.
Yeah, well, that'll be good news for renters for sure. Now, what sort of period of time that you think we could sort of see some sort of turnaround with regard to all of this? Because the clock is a ticking when it comes to affordability.
Definitely. And while this blueprint reform commits to a 5-year time frame, we're seeing some really serious bottlenecks in the construction industry. So we have not enough workers to build all of these homes at the moment. So there are some real logistical hurdles here just around the actual infrastructure side of building this many homes. But the fact that the government has really put this money on the table and committed in quite a big way is a good sign to me that we're at least getting things moving. And the other thing here is that this is just an important political goal for the government to achieve, because Australians are becoming increasingly frustrated about how difficult it is to navigate this housing market. And so I do think that we're going to start to see some shifts.
Ready to step up your property knowledge? Access powerful insights with us.
In Double Bay, for example, the record apartment price per square metre is over 100,000, and apartments in Potts Point, Elizabeth Bay at the moment, over 230 square metres are selling for, you know, north of 70,000 a square metre. Areas like Paddington and Darlinghurst are highly desirable because of their location to the city and the schools. School catchments are a really big driver, so we're living busier lives. And so if you have land in the Blue Mountains, for example, you've got lawns to tend to and you've got a great distance from the city. But of course, in Paddington, you generally have hard landscape services, you know, one or two parking off the streets, three or four bedrooms for the family, very lock and leave. And so being close to home is good after long days, easy for the kids to get back there, and on the weekends they can access the local amenity with comforts.
Have you noticed some of these new entrants as buyers' agents coming into the market that might not be as fully qualified as Veronica was telling us 2 weeks ago?
I think as with anything, you've got to qualify. You know, a lawyer's qualified because he's got a degree, and similarly with a doctor. Just because I've got a license doesn't mean I'm qualified. How does a buyer feel more confident that the buyer's agent that they're working with has the skill set? I think access to off-market's not enough. I think, you know, connections is not enough. I think those things are important, but what's just as important or perhaps more important is A, the ability to appraise the value of a property that you want to purchase, and B, have transactional expertise, transactional fitness. You're not going to run a marathon in your first jog. You're going to break it into 5, 10 and 22 and 42K spurts. Similarly, in what we do, experience over time time makes you better at what you do and offering better value to your clients. And I think one important component, which is overlooked, you know, looking at square meter rates. Square meter rates are important when assessing a value of a property because that's how valuers value. Developers build square meter rates, they sell on a square meter rate, and they derive a price point which the consumer buys. So if you reverse engineer that principle on an established property, you still need to consider that when a valuer goes into a property, they look at that property in two components, the land component and the dwelling component. Every valuation has a replacement cost on the building on that property. How do they derive that? Through square meter rates.
Every week, unravel the real estate market to empower your real estate knowledge.
She has requested specifically that you and your glorious radio voice wish her a happy birthday. She loves listening to the podcast and she loves listening to her dad when I drive her to Kinyi. And she's asked whether you might be able to wish her a happy fourth birthday, mate.
What is her name?
Hunter.
Yeah, happy birthday to you, Hunter, turning four today. It's a big age, isn't it, turning four?
It is, yeah. We told her a couple of years ago, which seemed like a long way away at the time, that she could have a puppy when she turns four, so that's next thing on the list because she didn't forget about it.
All right, well, let's dive into some real estate news out of Perth. And I see that the former president of the Real Estate Institute of WA, he's predicted a 20 to 30% increase in the Perth property market with prices over the next 3 years. Have you got any thoughts around that in terms of reality?
Yeah, I do. Look, he is known typically as a pretty balanced and conservative person. His original profession was as an accountant. So stereotypically, they tend to be like that. And he's a smart guy and he knows the market and he's been in it for a long time. So for him to make what I thought was a pretty bold claim, but still something, I don't disagree with him. I think it is possible that what he's saying could actually unfold over the next few years and we could see that level of additional growth, that 20 to 30% that he's talking about in one of those once in a generation super cycles that he references. So whilst it seems like a bold claim, especially on top of the growth that we've already had to this point, I agree with his sentiment that the median price here is currently undervalued, but only time will tell in terms of how much growth is left in the market. There's certainly a fair bit to come. Whether it's up to 30% remains to be seen.
Let's have a look at the rapid population growth. What factors have contributed to WA's growth, making it the fastest growing state in the country at the moment?
Yeah, look, there's a number of factors that have seen us go from, we were leading the country at 2.3% not that long ago. We were just above Brisbane. And then it spiked in the year through to June last year up to 3.1. And then the latest statistics from the ABS on the weekend that I saw had us at 3.3% through to September last year. In that September quarter, we saw 25,000 new people come into our state in just a quarter. So if you're assuming 2.5 people per household, that's a requirement for another 10,000 households. And obviously, we're not building anywhere near that. In terms of what's driving it, we've been in a state of positive interstate net migration for quite some time. Us and Brisbane tend to be. But we're also getting a much more significant surge in overseas migration, which we haven't typically seen in the past. And so 83% of our annual population increase throughout that period we spoke about is actually from overseas, which is probably atypical compared to our history.
We connect you to the best real estate information across Australia, the Real Estate Podcast.